gonna say my name because it's hard to pronounce. So it's actually Yair in Hebrew. So we heard a lot about how metric spaces play a role in data analysis, and I'm gonna give a survey of it's mostly work that I've been involved in. So this is kind of a disclaimer. But development in the field of theory of finite metric spaces in the last about 10 years. So, and the survey is gonna basically concentrate on the mathematics, and not gonna say too much about the applications of these things. But we heard a lot about, you know, how this is related to the analysis. So this quick reminder of the definition of a metric space, and you know, small reminder of applications. Let me go on since we already know this stuff. So I guess most of this talk is about metric embedding, and basically what it means, I'll give the definition in a second. What it means is we have two metric spaces. We can see how similar they are by trying to embed one metric space into the other one. And hopefully we can do that so that distances don't change too much. And there are several reasons to do this. One is if we embed one metric space into another metric space, which is more simple, for instance, into a Euclidean space, then we get a simpler representation of the original data, right? It may be simpler also because we lower the dimension of the data, and then we can apply maybe all kind of techniques that we know in the simple space, right? Because, you know, Euclidean spaces, we have a lot of tools to use that we can use in a general space. So this is one idea, and actually it leads me to the other one, which is the algorithmic application. If I have a way to solve some problem, let's say a clustering problem in a Euclidean space, I can now apply it on the original data. Okay, so this is motivated why this has been studied in computer science. There is a definition of embedding. Basically, just a function between the two metric spaces X and Y. And the distortion is just the ratio of the distance in Y between the images according to this function and the original distance. Okay, so this is distortion between U and V, two points in X. And the distortion of the embedding would just be the worst case ratio of this, that is the maximum distortion over all the pairs divided by the minimum distortion of all the pairs. This is the traditional notion that has been studied in mathematics for many years, and also in computer science. I also talk later about different notions of distortion. But this is the main one, or the classic one. And then you can ask, like, what kind of metric space we're interested in. So Euclidean space is the most natural one and the most extensively studied. There is the LP norm, the Rn with the LP norm. And then there are all kinds of things that have been studied a lot, which are metrics that come from graphs. And there's other kind of metric spaces that I don't mention here. But these are some examples. If I have a graph, I can define a metric space by looking at the shortest distances in the shortest path distances in the graph, and different graphs can define different metric spaces. If I have a planar graph or a tree graph, then I get the appropriate metric spaces. Ultrametrics and doubling metrics I'll talk about later. So let's start with embedding to known spaces. So I'm starting just to. Maybe some people have never seen this theory. This is a very basic fact that is associated with Fréchet, and It just says that any endpoint metric spaces, metric space can be embedded isometrically in L infinity. Okay, and the proof of that is very simple, and it's cute, so I'll give it to you. So the idea is this: we have basically we'll define n coordinates, okay, and every coordinate is associated with one of the points in the metric space. Okay, so for instance, there's a coordinate associated with w, okay, and the value of the coordinate would just be the distance from our point x to the point that's associated with this coordinate. Okay, so distance from x to w is the coordinate of x that is corresponding to w. And so if we have x and y, the difference between the coordinates is just the difference between the distance to w. Okay? And since we're in the L infinity norm, the maximum of that value is just obtained when w is actually one of x or y. And that would just give us the distance between x and y. This is the proof of this simple fact. It's kind of nice, and actually, I think it inspired the things like Bugin's theorem, which is one of the basic theorems in the field. So this slide actually gives us a picture of the basic theorems in discrete metric spaces. One of them is Bugin's. And it says that every endpoint metric space embeds in LP with distortion log n, in particular into Euclidean space. Okay, and this result is tied. So the proof that it's tied is not by Bugin, but say it like this. By the way, I mean, this is kind of an abusive notation that I use. Basically, this means that the distortion is at most log n, and that the result is tied. What's that?
For which r is p?
This is true for any p between 1 and infinity.
Including 1?
Including 1. Basically, if this theorem is true for Euclidean space, then it's true for any LP, because Euclidean space is in LP. But I studied like this because I want to comment on, or extend this theorem later. So this is one of the basic theorems. The other one that's really famous is, and been discussed here a lot, is the dimension reduction lemma with Johnson and Lindenstrauss. And here we're looking at endpoints that are already in Euclidean space, and we ask what is the distortion you can obtain in by embedding it into a smaller, a lower dimensional Euclidean space. And it says that we can get distortion 1 plus epsilon by embedding into dimension log n over epsilon squared. And this is nearly tight. Actually, I mean, this. Okay, so here it's actually nearly tight, it's not squared. Although this is probably the right bound, but the lower bound, as we know, is a little bit off. So mostly in the rest of this talk, I'm going to talk about work that I've been associated with, which kind of extends these two, or gives variations on these two basic theorems. One thing that's missing here is, if you're looking at the first theorem, it doesn't really say what is the dimension of the embedding. Okay? So it turns out that the original proof by Bugin, it was exponential in n. The closer look that has been done by some people in computer science showed an upper bound of log squared n on the dimension in this theorem that actually follows from Bugin's proof if you do it more carefully. And in a recent work with students of mine, Itai Abraham and Ofer Neiman, and a lot of the work that I'm talking about is joint with them. We show that the dimension can be reduced to log n And this is not by using Boolean proof, by using a different technique. And hopefully, if I have time, I'll say something about this towards the end. And actually, you can do a little bit better. So in fact, you can improve this log n a little bit better, which is strange because this is tight. But what happens here, and this is why I put this here, is that you can do it if you allow a little bit higher distortion. So if you go make the distortion log n to the power of 1 plus epsilon, then you can actually go below dimension log n, and this is the best you can do. And it's based on basically the same technique. So this is already interesting, and this is basically a lot of the things that I'm going to talk about are based on the same ideas, and hopefully I'll give you an impression of what these ideas are. By the way, if someone, those people who heard Yuval Rabbani talk earlier or last week, he mentioned some of these techniques as well. But we'll get to this. Okay, so one other aspect of this same embedding that gives the better dimension is that actually you can improve on this dimension as well, because the dimension that I mentioned was in terms of n. Okay, it was log n. You can actually get better than that by looking at the specific structure of the metric space. So in general, one way to measure dimensionality of an Earth space is by its doubling constant, okay? Which is the number. So if you look at a ball of radius r in the metric space, we can ask how many balls do we need in order to of radius r over 2 do we need in order to cover the ball of radius r? Okay, if this is always bounded by lambda, then we say its doubling constant is lambda. And there's a very natural definition of dimension, which people call the intrinsic dimension of the space, which is just log of lambda, of this lambda. Okay. And the reason that it's natural is that if you think about, say, Euclidean space, okay, then the number of these balls is 2 to the d if the dimension of the space is d. Okay. So in some sense, it's a natural extension of that. And now it's natural to ask, can we characterize the real dimension of an embedding, the embedding dimension, in terms of this intrinsic dimension? And this was actually asked by several people. There's been work of Aswad on this type of things. I'm not going to mention exactly his result, but basically asked and conjectured that something along these lines is possible. And indeed, extending our work that I mentioned before, you can get this type of result, which gives distortion almost log n in dimension which is the order of this doubling dimension. Okay? So if you have a metric space that has a constant doubling dimension, then you can actually use this basically the same embedding in order to embed it in constant dimension with distortion log n, roughly log n. And I'm not going to talk too much about the techniques, but if this says something to some of you, then these are some of the things that we're using, the Lobach local lemma.
So I understand, except what does same embedding using refer to?
Okay, so what it means is that the embedding that gives the Boolean theorem with dimension log n,
yes,
also gives this using, by applying nets and the Lobach local lemma on top of it. Okay, I guess it means that in some sort of more probabilistic meaning of the embedding, it works without even using that. So in some, if you're not really looking at the worst case scenario, but essentially it's the same embedding with And you know, you can use an algorithmic version of the Lobash local lemma to actually get this result. Okay, so this basically gives us one extension or improvement on Bugin's theorem. There's a more interesting property of the same embedding is it has improvements in terms of the average distortion. And what I mean, well, first let me say that average distortion is a very natural measure, okay? In some sense, the traditional in mathematics and also in computer science is to look at the worst case. But if we look at practical research, then in different areas of computer science, then we see that actually people don't look at worst case, or if they do, then it's basically an additional property of the embedding. The main thing that they're interested in is the average, or what happens to most of this. Okay, and there has been this applied work that indicated that there are really very very efficient results in terms of embedding, in terms of the average and most of the distances, and this has motivated looking at these notions. And you can define this in the most obvious way. Just take the average over all entries to distances of the distortion. There's another natural definition. I'm not going to talk too much about that. I'll mention it. Which is what we call the distortion of the average. So you could look at the average distance and look at the distortion of the average distance. Okay. Our results actually apply to both of these definitions, but I'm going to concentrate on this one in this talk. So the theorem now says the following. So every endpoint metric space embeds into LP with worst case distortion log n and dimension log n, as we mentioned before. But you can also say that the average distortion is constant. Okay, and again, it's the same embedding. It has these properties. And moreover, it has even more properties, which is you can extend this notion to what we call the LQ distortion. So basically, the LQ distortion is just take the distortion to the power of Q, take the average, and then take the Q root of that. And that extends the regular average, which will be the L1 distortion is equivalent to average. And the L infinity distortion is equivalent to traditional worst case, right? And then, it's very natural objective, which is the L2 distortion. And this actually has also been looked at in practical papers, this kind of measure. And the result says that the same embedding has, for every Q, it has LQ distortion order of Q. And again, this is basically orthogonal to constant. So basically, we have one embedding that has all these properties. Basically, the worst case is log n, the dimensions log n, the LQ distortion is Q. Plus, you can, if you look carefully, you can have the dimension depending on the intrinsic dimension. Okay, so this is basically one type of result. Maybe I'll write it down here, so I'm going to get back to this. So we have every endpoint. Yeah. so
an expansion of that.
Yeah, I just repeated, just copied it, because I'm going to get back to it later. So, and now I'm going to move to something a little bit different. But still, everything I'm talking about basically uses the same kind of techniques in some sense.
So, maybe I don't understand something. So, what is that every distortion does not depend on the number of what?
The LQ distortion does not depend on the number of what. So here is another aspect of these things. We can ask, what is the LQ distortion in the dimension reduction theorem? Okay? Dilemma of Johnson-Lindenstrauss. So this is actually, it's basically just the technical analysis of, you know, the standard Johnson-Lindenstrauss, and it shows, if we look at, we actually want to embed not in the log n over epsilon squared dimension, but we want to embed into dimension h, where h is something small, then if q is smaller than h, then we get that the LQ distortion is roughly 1 plus the ratio of q and h. Okay? So it's basically, we get LQ distortion, that the LQ distortion is constant, and it can get close to 1 even when h is a constant dimension. Okay. So that's kind of interesting, and it also implies, given this result, that every finite metric space embeds into LP with LQ distortion that is some constant, and, you know, this formula doesn't, it's not important. It's basically, if q and h are constants, and again, q should be less than h, then you get some constant distortion. So just interesting that, you know, this notion of average distortion, you can get interesting statements about embedding into small number of dimensions as well.
So if you take the average of the exponential of constant times the distortion, what's the...
The average of exponential in the
right.
Distortion.
So usually when you have a result like this, you can take a small enough constant, and you look at the exponential of constant times the distortion, and this is the piece of the formal power series that you get.
Isn't that when you take an exponential in the distortion, then you make worse, the larger distortions get
magnified. Right.
Well, that sounds problematic. Because, well, for this we need that q is small for this statement here. Okay, so if q,
so you're asking for a sub-Gaussian bound.
Yeah. Okay. Let's discuss. Okay. So this is basically a comment on extending, you know, these ideas about average distortion. Now, for basically completely different aspect of things. Okay. So one thing that I didn't mention, but maybe I'll get to it later, is that when you look at this result and we said that the average is constant, then you can say, okay, so there's some distances that will be distorted by log n, and some will be distorted well, say by constant. Which distances are preserved better? So it turns out that the distances that are preserved better are the larger distances in the metric space. Okay, and this kind of matches the philosophy of, you know, several mathematicians as well. It's like, if basically, the idea is that if you look at the metric space on a high level, then it's kind of Euclidean. Looks like it's Euclidean. For instance, Gromov was mentioning this has this coarse geometry philosophy, and we're trying to ask sort of the opposite here. Are there embeddings that preserve well the small distances in the metric? So, turns out you can say something about this. basically what I call here a k-local embedding means that if I have a metric space and I look at a point, instead of requiring that I want to preserve distortion to all the other points, all the distances in metric space, for each point I'm going to preserve distances only to some small ball around this point. Okay, basically to at most, there would be only k points in this ball. And I'm going to preserve distances only between this point and its k nearest neighbors. Okay? And this would be true for every point, I'll preserve this distances k nearest neighbors. So with this notion, we can actually get results that, you know, the results of all these embeddings can depend on k rather than on n. Okay? So we can get embeddings that work only for the k nearest neighbors, but their distortion and dimension are going to be much better than log n. For small k, of course. And also, you can get a single embedding where the distortion improves as you get closer to the point. Okay, so it's kind of the opposite of the other embedding. But interestingly, it's all based on the same ideas, the same methods of embedding. Again, the lowest local lemma. One even more interesting thing about this idea of local embeddings is that you can get a local dimension reduction lemma, and this is basically work from the last few weeks, so I'm going to be a little bit careful when I'm talking about this, but basically the statement, and this is work with Benwert and Leonard Schulman from Caltech. The idea is that you can get a version of the Johnson-Linder-Strauss lemma that is local. And what does that mean? So it means that for every point, I'm going to preserve the distances to its k nearest neighbors, okay? And the distortion for these distances will be 1 plus epsilon. But the dimension of the embedding would be log k over epsilon squared, okay? So rather than log n over epsilon squared. So it will only depend on this k. And this is not true in general. Actually, it's impossible in general, but under some very weak condition on the growth in the metric space, it's true.
Of balls?
Yeah, let me actually give a sort of like weaker statement than this, and then I'll explain what the type of result that you can get. So what you can get is something of this sort. Let's say that for every point, let's look at a ball of some radius r around it. Okay. Then, if the number of points in this ball is k, okay, then I can preserve distances from this point x to all the points in some internal ball of radius r over some alpha, where this alpha is going to be something like log of k over epsilon. Okay. It's a recent result, so don't, maybe a little bit different than this, but that's the type of result that you can state. So for every point, you can preserve distances in this ball with an embedding that has dimension log k over epsilon. I can say something about how this is done, but a little bit later after I'll explain some of the techniques. But I can just comment, I think I said it before, to you at least, that it's very related to your work, Ranan and...
Power
Yeah. Yeah, it's very close both in the type of result and also in the techniques. I'll be happy to do it if there's time after the talk. Okay, so far I've been telling you about, you know, basically two types of results. One is this, and the other one is the local embedding. Local embedding and the local dimension reduction. So what I want to do now is basically go tell you about a few more things that are both related to embedding into Euclidean space, but also will tell us a little bit about embedding into trees, which is another important aspect of these developments in metric embedding, and somehow it's all related to the same sort of techniques. So hopefully I'll be able to tell you about the techniques as well. Time for a detour. Actually, the detour starts close to what we talked about before, which is called the metric Ramsey problem. The metric Ramsey problem is instead of now wanting to embed a full metric space into Euclidean space, I'm asking the following question: given a metric space, a finite metric space, what is the largest subspace of it that can be embedded into Euclidean space with some given distortion? Okay. It's a very natural extension of the problem. Can be comparable to the standard Ramsey problems that we know from different fields, for instance in graph theory. I guess most people would know this theorem. Every graph of size n contains either a clique or independent set of size log n. It's a simple form of this theorem. Dvoretsky theorem, which is very well known in analysis, is also a type of this theorem. I'm going to skip exactly what it says. And that has motivated Burgen, Figel, and Milman to study this problem. And they state the following theorem: every n-point metric space contains a subspace of size of at least order log n, which embeds in Euclidean space with distortion 1 plus epsilon, and there's some constant depending on epsilon here, something like 1 over epsilon squared. And they get this theorem, and basically they thought that this problem is over in this theorem, and the reason they did is, I think, because of this result and Dvoretsky's theorem that have this log n bound. Turns out that what happens here is that this type of result really depends on what is this epsilon. And for small epsilon, this is indeed the best you can do. If you look at the larger epsilon, so in fact, we know that with distortion log n, you can embed the whole space, right? So in fact, the phenomena is different. And one of the key ingredients here in this proof is actually a type of space that's called an ultrametric, which is a tree metric, but it's also Euclidean in Euclidean space, and it's defined as follows: we have a root to tree, and it's labeled. The labels are non-increasing, and the distance between two points, and all the points in the metric space are in the leaves of the tree. The distance between two points, say x and z, is just the label of their least common ancestor. Okay. This is an ultrametric, and an extension of that is a KHST. KHST is the same thing, only that we require that these labels are decreasing by a factor of k when we go from a father to a son in this tree. And this is an important, or it is a very useful tool, and part of the reason it's very natural is that it has captures a hierarchical structured metric space. Okay? If you look at a high level construction of this tree, then we can see that at the first level of this tree, if we turn every child of the root into a subtree, okay? And this would be, you know, these purple things would be the subtrees. The distance between every two points in different subtrees is going to be the same. They're basically the label of the root, so it's going to be the same, some number delta one. So this is the high-level view of the space. Okay, this is the distance between points in different subtrees is equal. If we look at a particular subtree and expand it, then it looks the same. All the distances between points in that subtree that are in different subtrees is the same, some other label. Okay, that label will be smaller by a factor of k. So that means basically that, you know, the diameter of these subtrees is going to be much smaller than the distance between the subtree. And this goes on. Every time we expand the subtree, we get another structure of the same sort. So it really captures some hierarchically structured the systems. And these are some basic properties. I'm not going to go into this. They embed isometrically into a 2D sample. This is useful to know. And there are tree metrics, and you know, there's also some dimension reduction property. And they play a very a very important role in this theory. In particular for the Ramsey problem, we can see that we're actually gonna say that every metric space has a large, not just a large Euclidean subspace, but a large subspace which is similar to a KHST or an ultra metric. So what happened here? Oh, that's my fault. If we look at a line, at a space which is just on a line. And this is not an interesting example because this is in Euclidean space, but it doesn't really matter. We could take, for instance, a circle. It would be the same thing. And this is just an example to give you the idea. So look at points on the line which are equally spaced. We can find in them a structure which is close to an HST in the following way. We partition them into thirds. Okay, so right here and right here, we partition the line into three parts, right? This, and we remove the middle part. Okay, remove the middle part here, okay? And then we repeat recursively. Okay, so after we remove that, we partition here and we remove this, and so on. In the end, we're left with these black points, the black vertices, and the claim is that, you know, the metric on these black vertices is close to being a free HST, and basically the distortion is going to be free here. And maybe I'll skip the actual proof of that. But it's very natural. I mean, you can see it in the picture, basically, right? You build this HST, the difference between the actual distance on the line and distance in the HST is going to be just a constant factor.
So the amazing theorem here is that 3 equals 1 over 1 third.
It is, yeah. But there's actually another thing that's interesting, which is the size of the space.
Oh, that's different.
Yeah, the size of the space is 2 to the power of the height of this tree. The height of this tree is log to the base 3 of n. So the size of the space is n2 log to the base 3 of 2, okay? Which is some constant. Okay? And it's much larger than log n. Right? So, and this is a general phenomena. The general theorem says, and this is worked by me and not Tilinio, Mendelin, nor. And the theorem says that every endpoint matrix space contains a subspace of size, here you go, n to the power of 1 minus epsilon, where the distortion into an ultrametric is 1 over epsilon. And okay, and then there's some extension that we shall I'll skip for this talk, which talks about it. So the LQ distortion. But this is the main theorem. It says that the subspace is actually pretty large if we we can get some pretty large subspaces, basically n to some constant, which have constant distortion to Euclidean space. And these subspaces are going to be not only similar to Euclidean space, but actually to an ultrametric.
Just to understand here, the space you, the subset you pick does not depend on Q.
In the second theorem?
Yeah.
Okay. Talking about the size of the space?
No, the subset itself. There's a universal. Is there a universal?
Oh, one subspace
one
which
subspace
has this property for every Q.
Which has it for all Q.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Okay, so, I'm not going to give a proof of this, but I'll give you the flavor of the idea. And it's actually pretty natural. The way it works is by using partitions, and here we see first the this type of techniques, which is basically using partitions of matrix spaces into small diameter subspaces, which keeps repeating in almost all of these works. So, so what we do is you partition the matrix space into subspaces of small diameter. So, first we'll find one cluster of this type. Okay, this is this blue thing. It will be this dotted line. Okay, and the blue would be the core of the cluster. Okay, this cluster is going to have this property that, I'm saying it in a very informal way right now, is that the core of the cluster is going to be roughly heavy with respect to this part between the core and the actual boundary of the cluster. Okay, and what we're going to do, we're going to find such a cluster. We're going to leave the core, remove the part between the core and the boundary, and then we recurse on the rest of the matrix space. Okay? That's the whole algorithm. I mean, of course, To get the right property, you need to define exactly what is this property in a very subtle way, but generally that's the intuition. Okay? So the intuition is we're going to leave here a lot of points relative to the number of points that are in between the core and the boundary. And then we recurse, and we'll build an HST, a KHST here on this blue thing recursively. Okay? We do this for every blue thing recursively, and then we can construct from that an HST by taking all these HSTs and connecting them to a joint root. Okay, and the label of the root is just going to be the diameter of the space, the whole space, and that basically constructs it an HST. So this is the general idea that kind of repeats in all these constructions of embedding into trees. Okay? And also in the embeddings into Euclidean space. But in a different way, we'll see it a little bit.
The difference between the core and the boundary, because we're saying the number is more than so.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit more sophisticated than just saying the number is small. What you really need is exactly the property so that when you recurse, you'll get n to the epsilon points, right? So that's what you want to show, that in the end you get n to the 1 minus epsilon points. Okay? then you need a particular property that will observe that recursively. But roughly what it means is that the number of points here will be heavy with respect to the number of points that are in between the blue and the dot. It's actually pretty simple, but I mean, it takes a little time to get it. So after we see this theorem, a very natural question now is, can we see that there is a very large subspace of the macrospace that embeds into an ultrametric. Can we embed the whole space into an ultrametric? So after thinking about this question for just very little time, you can say that the answer is you can't do that. And the reason is, even if you look at the cycle on n points, you want to embed it not just into an ultrametric, but any kind of tree metric, the distortion will be at least n. It's not completely obvious to see this, but for instance, what is the most natural embedding of an n cycle into a tree? It just to remove one of the edges of the cycle. Okay? That gives you distortion n minus one. So it's very natural to see that this is not can be improved by a lot. But there is a trick that Karp observed that if you do this omission of an edge by random selection, actually the expected distortion is really good. Okay, so it's only two. And to see that, if we take the cycle on n points, we choose an edge at random. What's the? And now let's look at two adjacent nodes. Okay, so let's say these two, right? If that edge was chosen, okay, then the distortion for this particular pair of points would be n minus one, okay, because the distance is gonna be on the the other side of the cycle. But that happens only with probability 1 over n. Okay? And then there's probability 1 minus 1 over n that some other edge was chosen and the distance is still 1 after we remove that edge. Right? Is this clear? So, maybe very cool. I mean, this is an important idea, actually. Mm-hmm. So, if we look at an edge, right, there's probability 1 minus 1 over n that I chose this edge and removed it, right? Then this distance is still one in the embedding. I embed the cycle into this line, and the distance didn't change. But if I chose this edge, and this happened with probability 1 over n, then the distance between these two endpoints is becoming n minus 1. But the expected distance is less than two. Okay. So this is interesting and can be generalized into a more general theorem. And
log n scales.
Say again?
The log n scales.
Only that you can get a constant factor, but in general, but any endpoint metric space can be can be probabilistically embedded into an ultrametrically distortion log n, and this means that we look at the expected. So it means the following. We have, instead of an embedding into one ultrametric, we have a distribution over embeddings into ultrametrics. And we look at the expected distortion. One extra property of this is that each of these embeddings is non-contractive. This is only increase, but the expectation is going to be bounded by log n. Okay. And again, here there's a version, or basically, you can show that the same embedding preserves the average distortion and the LQ distortion. Okay. And the proof of this theorem is very similar to the previous one. Actually, it was historically came before the other one, but the idea here is that, again, we're going to use partitions, but we're going to use what we call probabilistic partitions. And this means that instead of having at the deterministic partition, we're going to have a distribution over partitions. Okay, and again, we're going to partition the metric space into these low diameter clusters. So now the blue thing is the cluster. Okay, and we're going to do the same thing as before. We're going to construct recursively ultrametrics or HSTs on these blue things, and then connect all of them with one root and give that root the label, which is the diameter of the metric space. So basically exactly the same as before, only that now we don't remove anything. We just do this, we don't remove any points. Okay. And we use these probabilistic partitions, which the distribution that we're going to use is going to have a very special property. And the special property is going to be that the probability that an edge is cut by this probabilistic partition, meaning that it's not, that if we look at two points which are adjacent, which are close to each other, the probability that they are not contained in one cluster is going to be small. And small means that it's going to be something like the distance between them divided by the radius. Okay? So, and the radius is going to be chosen basically to be proportional to the diameter of the space. So basically the probability that, for instance, if I look at two points, x and y, and let's say x is here and y is here, the probability that this is actually the picture, that they are not in one cluster, is going to be at most their distance, the distance between them divided by the diameter. Okay? And that's, and times some scaling factor. And the scaling factor is really something like log n. Okay, so let me write it down here. So the probability that the probability that we fail, in some sense, that x and y are separated, basically, would be at most the distance between them divided by the diameter of the space times log n. This will be the property of this probabilistic partition. And then, since we're now gonna, if that happens, we're gonna give them a distance which is the diameter of the space, okay, because that's gonna be the label of the root. Then we can see that the expectation of this would be just, if we multiply this by the diameter, it's gonna be just the distance between them times log n. Okay, so this would be the expectation of the distortion of this pair. So now it's a little bit more involved in this, because this can happen in every level of this recursion. So this analysis gives us more than just log n. But this is the key idea of in this construction.
So in order to get rid of that, some kind of situation, you have to have roughly get over dx, y, such trees, you actually have some meaningful average. So the expectation is one thing, the concentration is another. They're very large. Like in a circle, you need n trees to actually get a meaningful level.
I'm not sure I understand exactly what you're asking. The question is how many trees you need for this?
So let's say I don't want to look at the expectation, I actually want to look at the concentration. I want to take n trees and take their average and look at the depth.
Okay. How many trees you need? I think it doesn't follow immediately, but I think it's enough to take a polynomial number of trees. It's almost linear, but certainly a polynomial number. Okay. All right. So this is one of the main key ingredients in all this work is this idea of probabilistic partitions. And here is a definition, more formal definition. And it's a little bit involved, but let me state this because this is important. Actually, this is the thing that Yuval Ravani was also talking about. So now we're coming back to that. And he was mentioning all kind of applications of this to clustering and other things, if you've been to his talk. So basically, we're going to partition the space into these clusters. Okay. The diameter of each cluster is going to be bounded by some parameter delta. Okay. And basically, I mean, the reason that in this picture they all look like balls or parts of balls is because almost all the algorithms actually construct these clusters in this way. So they construct balls. And the property of the partition is going to be the following. For every point x, the probability that a ball at radius eta times delta, where eta is some parameter, in our case, the eta is going to be some, like in our case, in the theorem that I mentioned before, eta is something like 1 over log n. And the probability that a ball of that radius, eta times delta, is contained in one cluster, so it's not cut by the partition, is going to be at least some constant delta. Okay? And you know, mostly we'll use this delta equal half. Okay? So the probability that a ball of radius, say, delta over log n, is contained in a cluster is at least a half. And that's the theorem that you can get for any metric space on n points. And then there are sort of strengthening of this lemma. Maybe before I say something about that, are there any questions about this? So this is really an important tool to know. An extension of the result says that you know you can actually parameterize here and get something that's better than 1 over log n if you look carefully at the local area of a point and parameterize the result in terms of the point and not like globally. Okay, and this actually is useful to show the log n bound in the theorem, the probabilistic embedding theorem. And for actually, this is used in almost all these results that I've talked about. The way it's parameterized is this: if we look at a point x, instead of saying 1 over log n, you can say 1 over log of the growth rate, the local growth rate around x. Is defined later. So. Maybe I should just write it down. The local growth rate around x, you can define in this way. It's just the ratio between the ball around x at radius, let's say, 64 delta, and the ratio and the number of points in a ball around x of radius delta over 64. Okay, this is one definition that you can give for growth rate. Okay, so how much does the space expand in a local area of x, which is roughly a distance delta? Right. Okay. So now I basically get back to to the original theorems of this type about embedding into Euclidean spaces. And after we saw that these type of embeddings are useful for embedding into ultrametrics, I'm going to give you the first explanation why it's useful for embedding into Euclidean space. Okay. This was the embedding to ultrametrics, which is embedding to ultrametrics, you can actually think about it also as an embedding to L1, if you want, because And ultrametric is a tree. A tree is in L1. It's not hard to see. And since it's a probabilistic embedding, we can think about it as a convex combination of these L1 embeddings, which is also in L1. Okay. So so that's one thing. And then Rao showed basically how to use this type of embeddings for embedding to L2. And this is sort of an extension of these ideas. What you do is you build these partitions, probabilistic partitions, for many values of delta. Okay, basically for every delta, which is a constant power, let's say 4 to the i. Okay, and you build a probabilistic partition which is delta i bounded, meaning the balls are or the clusters are, have this have a diameter at most delta i. And they are eta padded with this parameter eta. So here is the partition with delta equals 4, and then we have the partition for delta equals 16, and so on, and we have all this bunch of partitions. And then we can define the embedding in the following way. So for every x, we look at the distance from x to the boundary of its cluster. Okay? And that's basically is going to be one coordinate in this embedding. Okay? So after, let's say this is the partition, this is x, the distance to its boundary, to the boundary of the cluster, is going to be roughly the coordinate. And this should be fixed by multiplying by a random number, either 0 or 1, with probability half, basically. So instead of just taking the distance, some of this cluster at random we choose and we make their coordinate 0. Okay? And that is the whole embedding. Okay? So the basic embedding. Then in order to get the best parameters, we'll have to be a little bit smarter than this, but this is how we use partitions to construct a Euclidean embedding. And that just means that the embedding is a collection of all these coordinates. And plus we repeat this log n times, meaning we'll have log n repetitions of this. So actually the number of coordinates is going to be log n times whatever we need here, and whatever we need here in this description is log of the aspect ratio of the metric space, number of coordinates. So in this description, actually, the dimension is log n times log of the aspect ratio, and the distortion is going to be whatever is written here. Since I'm not given a proof right now, I'll just say the following. I mean, why does this make sense? Okay, so the reason it makes sense is the following. If we look at two points x and y, okay, and let's say that there is some scale in which they will be separated by the partition. Okay, let's say that in this scale x is here and y is outside of this ball. Then in that scale, there is a probability at least half that the distance between x and the boundary of its cluster is going to be at least the parameter eta times delta, which was the parameter of the probabilistic partition, right? Because we said that the property was that the ball around x with this radius is contained in the cluster of x, so this happens with probability at least half. So this means that the distance from x to the boundary of its cluster is going to be at least this value, at least eta times delta. So basically, this means that if x and y are a distance roughly delta, then this coordinate is going to be at least eta times delta. Okay? And translating that into distortion means that the distortion is at least 1 over eta, roughly. It's not exact because we're losing something by having many coordinates and not just this one coordinate. So again, this is a rough sketch of the idea. But this is why embeddings are used, or these partitions are used.